Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. In this episode, I talk with Christo van Rensburg. Christo is a former top doubles player in the world. He was on the number one team with Paul Anacone back in the 80s. He won the 1985 Australian Open. He lives in Austin, Texas, and for the first time in 2023, is going to be the tournament director for the ATX Open. So this is the second time I've had Christo on the podcast. If you haven't listened to that first episode, I highly recommend it. He is a wealth of doubles knowledge, and we dive deep into strategy in that one. In this episode, we talk about the ATX Open, several players who he has coming to Austin in February and early March, just before Indian Wells. And we do talk a little bit of strategy as well. I ask him a little bit about return strategy and a few other things. So, as always, this is a really fun conversation with Christo. He's a great guy, a great coach, and a great person. So without further delay, enjoy this conversation with Christo van Rensburg. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, we have a repeat guest on Christo van Rensburg. He won the 85 Australian Open. He's a former top five doubles player. And now, this is new since the last episode, the tournament director for the ATX Open. Christo, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me back again. And obviously, it's getting close now. You know, we around the corner to have this inaugural year in Austin that everyone has been waiting for.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun tournament, and I want to ask you a lot about that. But first, for the listeners who may not have heard or may not know you, so your first episode we did, I think we scheduled maybe 45 minutes and we were on for about an hour and a half, like you mentioned. Christo's covering his face now. But it's one of the best strategy episodes we've had. We're on episode 90 almost now, believe it or not. And it was such a popular episode that that Guy and Karen, who we were just chatting about, flew from California to see you, to spend a few days with you on the court. So for people who haven't listened, definitely go back and listen to that, and we'll link to it in the show notes. So I want to ask you a little bit about strategy, but let's talk about the new tournament first. The ATX Open, it's going to be in Austin at Westwood Country Club, February 27th through March 5th. Tickets are available right now. Tell us how this came to be, how the idea got started for the tournament.
4 years ago, Mr. Brian Sheffield came to me, and he loves tennis, and he says, I want to run tennis tournaments. Can you help me run it? So mm-hmm. We brainstormed and we decided to start on the ITF circuit. Started in 2 15,000s for a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. So the next year we actually did 2 UTRs. We upped that prize money. Two years ago, we then went back to the ITF 25. And that has been such a success, because some of those players who played actually played in the French and Wimbledon and the US Open main draws. So the goal was to learn about running events, to give opportunities for players who are starting out, who has to go make it on the tour. And we enjoyed it so much. And then we decided to look for a license to go onto the WTA tour. And there's obviously a lot of rules. So the first one is around the corner, like you said. We always call it week 9. So if you ever forget when the ATX Austin Tennis Open is, WTA, it'll be week 9 on the calendar.
Okay.
Sometimes easier to remember that than the dates.
Yeah.
And that's a week before Indian Wells. So again, a great week because we feel all the players are then in Europe and they have to, or the Middle East, and they have to fly back to Indian Wells. We offer an outdoor tournament for them to get a little bit of matches in and obviously compete at a very high level and then move them over to Indian Wells. So when week 9 became available, we brainstormed quickly to go ahead and get that week signed.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when I was looking at the calendar, it's, if I'm a player, it's definitely the probably most attractive option before Indian Wells, because you get to get on the right time zone and play outdoors in the heat a little bit leading up to Indian Wells. And I know, so Danielle Collins is the face of, I guess, I don't know if you'd call her the face of the tournament. She's on the website. How did you get hooked up with her, and what's her connection to the ATX Open?
Well, in the beginning, when you go through the list and you kind of look at players, and then I found out that her agent, I actually played tennis with his dad. And his dad is originally from Zimbabwe, but they all live in South Africa. It was Tony Fawcett. And Matthew Fawcett works for IMG. I'm an IMG client. And we got together and we just clicked right from the start. So that's how that happened. And obviously to have someone that was a finalist of the Australian Open.
Yeah.
And she arrived. I didn't know it. And we spent 3 days together. And at the end of the week, she said, I like it so much. You know, I'm actually going to want to play the whole event also, because we brought her in for the launch. It was a lot to ask someone just in the beginning, come in for the launch. I want you to play. I wanted her to get accustomed with Austin, Texas. And she had a great time. And we just clicked. So looking forward to see her again coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. And she had a good win. We're recording this on January 16th. So the Australian Open started yesterday, and she had a tough 3-set win yesterday as well. What other players can we expect? I know Sloane Stephens has been announced. Anyone else that you can share with us at this point?
Yes, we are going to announce Peyton Stern. Coming as one of the up-and-coming players in America. And what we've just done last week, we have decided that because we are the Drop Shot Series, that the winner of the ITF Women's 25K in Austin will get a wild card into the main draw of our WTA 250.
Okay.
So, well, you're the first one to hear about this, but I assume when this podcast is playing, the news will be out, because it's going out this week. She has been great. She's already ranked 200. She's the first UT Texas female tennis player to win the NCAA in singles. They also won it in doubles in the same year. She has a huge following here. When she came to the ITF, she did a lot of social media video for us. She was excellent. People love her, and we can't be more proud in giving her this wild card to come and play in her hometown where she went to college. I know she's not from Austin, but all the Austinites see her as a home girl who brought titles for the UT Texas team.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a good team that year. They won the national title. I believe it was her freshman year.
We're also negotiating with, we're going to make another announcement. We're just negotiating, you know, who we would like, because it's getting closer. And we're getting a lot of requests. That's very exciting for me to see.
Yeah.
Because it seems where we're going now, so many of the top Americans want to come and play. Some already entered. So we're very excited to see that.
That's awesome. That's really good to hear.
And the names will be posted also on our website.
So the website, atxopen.com. So people can see the full, I mean, by the time this is released, there will be probably more player announcements and people can buy tickets there as well. What about on the doubles side? You're going to have a 32 singles draw, a 16 doubles draw. Any doubles players announced yet?
We haven't gone that route yet.
Yeah.
But obviously, because I played with Paul Annacone on the tour and I love doubles, and that's why I'm doing the show for you. I know you're coming. I mean, listen, I have a lot of respect for all the things you've done. I know the first few years must have been so hard to put this together, but I think I see you more on all these news and outlets, and I see some of the top commentators on the TV. So well done there. You should feel proud about yourself. And I know you coming, but doubles is a big deal for me. You know, we looking into scheduling doubles matches on the center court. TV plays a big part in things now that I'm also learning. But and it's at the Westwood Tennis Club, and a lot of those players, those people who are playing in all the leagues, they love to see doubles.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That'll be really exciting. And I know a lot of the singles players will probably play doubles as well. That's very, I would say, probably more popular on the WTA Tour than the ATP right now anyways.
To get that extra match outside. Because most of the tournaments before us was indoors. And again, going to Indian Wells for their prime event, they need matches outside.
Yeah. So I was curious, what's going on? We've got 41 days till the start of the tournament. So what's going on?
It's creeping up.
Very soon. What's going on behind the scenes for you right now? Are you working on just getting the player field set, or you've more focused on selling tickets right now? What's talk to people a little bit about what goes on kind of behind the scenes for a tournament like this.
The biggest thing putting something like this together is to start off by finding out which divisions we need some expertise put in those divisions. So they can kind of start managing those categories. And then we have to add people to help them. So, for instance, you have the transportation, you have the players, everything that's related to players. That's food, that's the accommodation. And then you need to have a department for all the volunteers. We are having over about 300 volunteers when you count in ball kids, drivers, ushers, and greeters. We are at this stage, if this podcast go out, we would love to add a few more drivers that we are reaching out. But that is a big organization. What we're doing now, we have a lot of meetings scheduled during the week so we can make sure nothing falls through the cracks. And like you think, running a first event, every time we have meetings, you hear about small little things that we just have to make sure we address them.
Yeah.
This week, we are busy with developing the trophies. So that's on the agenda. Nice. We have started with that. And like everything else, you need to kind of know who's going to make the decisions on one and then get it done. The clothes have been ordered. We get really, really great clothing coming in for the all the volunteers from the company TASC, T-A-S-C. Okay. And vendors, we have a few vendors signed up to sell merchandise. You know, Runway Athletic is a local company for women. Uhomo is the men's side of it, that they always go to tournaments. So we're exciting, and I think the merchandise is going to look great.
Good. That's awesome. So yeah, we have a lot of listeners in Austin. So it looks like they can volunteer through the website, atxopen.com, and there's a volunteer tab at the top. So you need more drivers. So anyone listening,
we need more drivers, and you're getting some really nice. And also every volunteer has a ticket during the first 4 days when they do a session. that we're looking into this now because volunteers are going to get also tickets.
Yeah.
So I think that's set out on the website where if you're a volunteer, you're going to be able to watch tennis as a thank you from us. So please cool. sign up. We're looking. We need more drivers that yeah. does not speed. And you get to interact with the players.
You can't speed much in Austin anyways. The traffic there is bad enough. So
don't tell the people outside that. We want them here. But Austin is a great city.
It is when a lot of fun.
When we applied for the license, not to change the subject, the WTA has been looking to get some big women's event mid-America.
Yeah.
And we filled that gap now.
Yeah, it's and a also perfect...
In Austin also, what we're filling the gap now, there's, we have it on the website, missing puzzle piece, where this is a female tournament coming to Mid-America and into Austin. So looking forward to kind of bringing the best female athletes to Austin.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be fun. Yeah, I had some friends volunteer here for the WTA finals. I think one of them was a driver and they loved it, you know, because they're driving and they never know which player is going to hop in the car. And then one of them got to drive Iga to the courts one day. And it sounds great. Like a lot of fun.
You get an opportunity, you know, you get an opportunity to have a player in your car that you'd be so close to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. All right. Anything else on the tournament before I ask you a couple of strategy questions? I want to take this chance to pick your brain.
So we signed with Tickstrax to do our ticketing.
Mm-hmm.
They do Miami and they do San Jose. And I know they do a few more. Those were the two big ones. So last week, I just had a general question for him. I said, I see we're selling really well. When you look at all the tournaments you've done before and how it looks, the tickets we're selling, he says to me, Christo, if your expectations were really high and you're wanting to sell a lot of tickets, you already passed that about a month ago. He says you should be the most happiest tournament director about how ticket sales are going. We are regretting now that our stadium is only 1,500 seats.
Wow.
But ticket sales are going great. I mean,
that's
we are
good.
So excited about that because we need that also when you talk to sponsors about how eager people are to come and watch tennis in Austin.
Yeah.
So ticket sales are really doing well. Like he said, I'm just giving you his words because they see it coming in every day.
That's
and
good.
We already added 6 extra rows, but now we can't go anymore for this tournament.
Wow. So people should hop on it quick because is it possible that you can sell out?
Yes, we are already about sold out over the last 3 days.
Yeah.
So it's getting now where, you know, it's getting, you can see the people now moving. Okay, I'm going to have to now go and buy on Thursday, or I'm going to have to go and buy on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But again, for the people, I would like to say this. There is nothing nicer for a tournament director or sponsors and for the players specifically to go and play in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So please come, enjoy. You know, there's going to be great food. And, you know, obviously there'll be drinks. So we're very happy about the partners who are coming in for the food vendors. We have Huckleberry that I got to meet. It's a food truck company, but the ladies were great. We have Loro that is Austin. I mean,
I love
Asian
Loro.
Barbecue. The owner is a great tennis fan. And then The Grove, who started in Austin. They actually gonna what we're doing, Loro and The Grove are opening up their restaurants for about 20 to 25 people that the players can sign up, and we're gonna spoil the players at their restaurants. Currently we're looking for two more to come in. And that's one thing, when I was on the tour, they had this tournament in New Haven. Mm-hmm. And every morning there was a sign up for about 20 or 30 players, first come, first serve. And you got invited to come to these restaurants. And I went to Beth, who's the founder of, she's actually a member at my club. She's the mm-hmm. founder of The Grove. And she jumped right into it. And she's actually also becoming our liquor concessionaire. So it's going to be great for these players. I've eaten at these restaurants. They're going to enjoy it. They'll sign up in the morning. And they take their wife or their girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever is in their entourage. Mm-hmm. And they go and eat there and get to see Austin. Very yeah. excited about that little perk. And then yeah. we're going to do a little bit of social media with the restaurant. They're going to get some advertising. And if they open their restaurant, they are invited that day to come to the tennis as a guest of mine. So exciting.
Very cool.
We're helping people who are helping us.
Yeah, very cool. So you're going to have two courts, right? There's a stadium court and then like a court one or something?
Yeah, there's a stadium and a grandstand. And then we have one more court for Saturday and for Tuesday.
Okay, got it.
Just because we have to have a backup court where we'll schedule a few matches because of weather. And, you know, it could be a long day. And we're trying to avoid that players will have to play at 10 at night.
Yeah.
That's why we're scheduling two matches at night starting at 6 p.m.
Okay.
The daytime, we're scheduling matches starting 1 or 2 days. They start at 10:30, but averaging from 11. We have three matches scheduled on the center court, and we're holding. And then we have outside matches, but there's a not before 4 o'clock match scheduled on the outside that we're then going to move inside if we know we can kind of put it on there at 4:30 or 5, not later, so the 6 o'clock matches can start. So two sessions again, 1,500 people in the stadium, and we'll take them out for the afternoon and bring in the news session people for the night session.
Okay. And you're saying inside the stadium's not covered though, right?
No, it's not. I just mean inside. Because it's surrounded by stadium. Right. So center court and grandstand.
Awesome. Okay.
Grandstand is actually going to look great. We've kind of had this idea of Wimbledon Henman Hill. So we had some seating. And then on the side, there's a grass bank that people could sit on. There's seating, but it's open seating. So you can sit, if you want to sit on a towel, you can sit kind of on the sides. And right behind the right behind the 350 kind of stadium, where people would buy all their food and drinks, if they stand there, they would overlook these 350 people sitting there, and they can watch the match. They won't be blocked. So I think it's actually going to be the hit of the tournament is that second court.
That area, we
designed that nicely. So I think people are going to like it. I'm excited about that one. We just need a name for it. Maybe Will's Doubles Heel or something.
Doubles Court. All right, so everyone can go to atxopen.com for tickets to volunteer as a driver and check out anything else about the tournament. Definitely encourage people to go. I'll be there all week interviewing.
Where are you getting I'm planning your tickets? On it. Where are you getting your tickets? You will?
I was banking on you, Christo.
I told you before what you've done. You deserve to sit on the court.
I appreciate that. So let's dive into a little bit of return strategy. So I'm working on a return strategy ebook it's a Google document that is about 46 pages so far. So I'm selfishly going to use this time to learn more about return strategy from you. So let's start with the returner. One common question I get from people is, how often should I be hitting down the line when I'm returning?
You're going to let me give all my secrets now away. And that's you right. Want a ticket, and you want to sit on the center court, and you come from the whole week.
You already won your Australian Open in 85, so.
Okay. I don't know if the same rules are still working, but I know Guy Vidal came, and he liked it, and he says he's playing a lot better tennis now, so we're going to have to check if his ranking go up. I hope he's listening.
I think he is.
Down the line is a tough thing, you know, mm-hmm. because firstly, when I put a team together or I would play, I would ask a returner, can you go down the line if they serve to your backhand and your forehand? Mm-hmm. Looking back, when we played, there were some really great returners. But if you serve them a certain way, they could not go down the line. Mm-hmm. So then you would serve there and you would cross.
Right.
And if you serve to the side they can, you'll be more cautious. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of strategy that I use. I would go and work a lot on the returns and call them where they're going to go and return. And then I'll just serve anything I want and see if they can do that. Because yeah. the good people on the tour and the coaches are going to sort you out.
Yeah.
I played the Brian Butters, and later on I kind of watched them. These things are all pre-planned, where you serve and mm-hmm. where you poach and when you go. So for me, if a returner says to me he's very good and he cannot, then I'll move him rather to a side, because he's still, even if it's not his favorite side, because he'll still be so good that even if I take 10% away from his top level, he mm-hmm. needs to be able to return down the line or cross court before the guy serves.
Yeah, either there's direction.
There's one thing that I find. You know, I'm going to open a can of worms here and people are going to attack me, but I know Anacone and I, you know, fortunate, we're number one in the world as a team. When I hear people says, oh, he went down the line because he saw the guy poach. Now, sometimes it does happen, but when you get it to return a ball that's coming to you at 125 plus.
Yeah.
I just don't buy into that.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm old school. So I'm gonna give you just a simple example for me when we talk about returning down the line. I played with my wife in all the Grand Slams. I played with my sister-in-law. I played with mm-hmm. a lot of people. My wife, one day we're just sitting and someone asked her, was it fun to play with Christo on the tour? And she says, you know what was fun and what took the pressure off? When he said, hit this one down the line, lob this one when they serve to you, hit this one cross court. Then later on, I sat in a meeting where I wanted to study how the brain works and how do you make faster decisions. Mm-hmm. And overall, the main thing that came out, make one decision, even if it's the worst decision in your life, make it. Because over 100 times that you are going to return, we just talk about returns now, your returns are going to be better. Because what happens on returns down the line? You return down the line, the player is not poaching, it's a winner. Now your partner is looking at you, why do you go down the line? And you feel so bad because you went down the line, you lost the point.
Yeah.
If you both decided I'm going down the line and you hit it down the line and you miss, or the guys there putting the volley away, you guys aren't mad with each other,
right?
Because it was a team decision. So for me, down the line is all predetermined.
Yeah.
Now there's a skill, and everyone looks at it different, is when do you go down the line? When don't you? There's no magic pull for it. Mm-hmm. Everyone has that, and that's everyone's secret. In the old days when we played, we also figured out you had these people that says, okay, I'm going down the line in the first or second point. because then they will never cross again.
Yeah.
And there were 80% of those people there. And you start picking up, when did they cross? So then you go down the line, you know, you're just waiting for them. They're going to go down the line, the first 2 points. The main thing about it is, if you play leagues and you're not having coaches full-time with you, I'm just talking to general people who love doubles.
Sure.
They're probably not going to pick up on this. But I would then just say to them, find a way to go at least once a game down the line. And never forget, if you do something that's winning you the point, don't change. I learned a valuable lesson from on the tour from Lendl. We were just sitting one day, and I think I shared this before. Don't change. First, see if your opponent can change.
Yeah.
Everyone is not that good that they can change.
Yeah.
So down the line is a little bit of a tricky thing, but it's a feel. You know, can you do it?
Yeah.
So we talked actually a lot about it, but you should be able to return down the line.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah, I think, going into the match with a mindset of like making your opponent make the adjustments first, I think is typically a great place to start. Because, and a lot of it depends on matchups, right? Like if you're going into the match and you feel like you're the better team or the better player, like they're the ones that have to make the adjustments, right? So,
and the good ones can, but they might take a few points to figure it out, and then you win the first few. I think the biggest thing about down the line, if I can give anyone a tip here, you're not going down the line to win the point.
Yeah,
if you win it's the biggest bonus you should get and feel about it. That very rarely is happening. You're going down the line to show the opposition, I can hit it there at any time. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to start thinking if you're going to go down the middle all the time.
Yeah.
If you go down, that means the court gets wider for you to return. And now it just becomes a mind game. So when you go down the line and they poach, great for you. Your decision was, I'm going down the line. Theirs was, they're going to poach. Nice. So when you go down the line, take the pressure off yourself. It's not to win the point. Aim that ball over the doubles, over the singles line.
Yeah.
If you feel you're going to go and return doubles down the line to win the point, you're putting way too much pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
That's not what the job is. The job is just to show them, I can, pay attention.
Yeah.
For that reason, I put someone returning that can do both sides.
Because
they're going to figure you out and they're going to serve you there on the higher level. And then if you can only go to one side, that spot is going to get, we call it, it's getting smaller. It's getting smaller for you to go because the people are always there, the net guy. And after a while, you start missing because you're pressing.
Yeah, too much pressure. Yeah, I like that idea of you're not hitting down the line to win the point. You're hitting down the line to freeze the net player, to set up future points.
And you'll make more. You have that attitude, you'll make so many more.
Right, that's another good point.
As long as you and your partner knows why you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know what's the hardest thing on the tour when we played? It's when you do it and you don't really have a long relationship with your partner because you're playing, obviously, you're playing with someone new now this week. You don't have a set doubles partner.
Yeah.
Now you kind of, how much information do you share with them? You want to win, but next week you play against him. He's not your regular partner. So now you go down the line and the guy says, no, don't go down the line again. You should now go cross court. And the whole thing just falling apart. And believe me, this happens at the highest level, ladies and gentlemen. The highest level, sometimes someone plays with someone else. And the partner will say the wrong thing because they don't understand why you're doing it. And you can't share all the information always because this might be just a 1 or 2 week tournament. And mm-hmm. Will, you coaching some top people on the tour, you know what I'm talking about.
I've seen
sometimes
it.
Sometimes you just zip it. You just zip it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I can't share any names, but yeah, there's conflict amongst the top teams for sure.
And this is what's great about these podcasts. You know, we played at a high level, but we can share these stories with people playing at clubs. These are your followers.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a sin to go down the line and miss it.
Yeah.
Just showing the people I can change direction.
Yeah, I'm willing to do it.
And even us, we never made everyone down the line. Just don't put pressure on yourself. I need to make it good because it's a mind game. If you go down the line and the guy doesn't poach, he decided not to go. You don't know what's going on in his mind. Mm-hmm. Go down the line, he didn't poach. Hey, he's going to win the point. Don't apologize.
Yeah.
You were very happy that you could make it down the line and he had to hit another ball. Have that attitude.
Yeah, the no apologies actually is something that's already in the my return strategy ebook because I see it all the time where people make a return. It might be down the line or cross court. I see it more often cross court and my partner will hit a good return cross court off of a good first serve and then the net player will poach and hit a good volley for a winner and my partner will apologize to me. And I'll say, what did you do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. You hit a good return and the net player made a good poach and hit a good volley. Like there's no reason to apologize for that.
Well, so. this ebook should be the most expensive book that anyone has ever paid for. And you should make it should be like a collector's item, but you're totally right. And to all the listeners here, the biggest thing you would like to learn and you would need help from people, and this is where a coach is very important, even the club coach for you,
mm-hmm.
you have to realize losing a point is not always that you did something wrong.
Right.
Just focus if you did the thing that you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly what Will said, we talked about this in the beginning now, in the first part when you said about returning down the line. My decision was to return cross court.
Mm-hmm.
That's all my decision was. I did make it cross court, or in your story, the player made it cross court, mission accomplished. After that, you can't worry about what they are thinking of doing.
Right.
And that's why apologizing now. What better did you want it to do? Oh, I should have gone down the line.
You didn't
did
know
what you told yourself to do. Make a decision. Go with it. It ended up being a great return.
Yeah. So let's chat real quick, and then I'll let you go after this. Returner's partner. So this is often, I feel like it's
you're
the most difficult.
Me. Well, you're killing me. All my secrets are going out. You're killing me.
You don't have to share everything, Christo.
That's
we can put
okay.
some of it in the ebook and I'll give you a percentage. How does that sound?
You don't have to, but you know, the goal is just like Guy Vidal and his wife who came,
mm-hmm.
the podcast found someone, mm-hmm. you know, and we became friends. He actually became a sponsor after that for my ITF.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Tennis Biz is his company. And you should put it on. And he's going to do great.
Yeah.
He's putting packages together where players can go and put all software driven, put in their schedule and predict, like if they go to this round and that round, then mm-hmm. they'll get this amount of money. They put that into, and can they then afford a coach? It's all planning, like a budget thing, because obviously he's very good with money and that's his situation. But I think he's going to do great. So out of your podcast, you know, hope he's doubles. If his doubles don't get better, then I'm firing him as a sponsor for my partner. Great.
So tell me about the returner's partner. Where should they start? What should they be looking for to read the point on the return? What kind of mindset should they have?
What's the word I'm looking for here? Is it detrimental? I think that's the word I'm looking for. And help me out if that was the word. If you are not returning and you don't know where your partner is going to return, it's detrimental. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, that works.
It works for my bad English.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, it is seriously. It is.
It's very important to know where your partner is going to return.
My sentence is like this. When I play with Will, now doubles, I want to surprise the opponents. I don't want to surprise Will, my partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because why must I want Will, if we're a team now, to know who is the first person on the other side that's going to hit the ball when I hit it, especially on a return. Because now Will is going to be much faster to react because he knows I'm going down the line. And also what he's going to know then, he's going to watch that person at the net. If I said I'm going down the line and that person is poaching, already he will see my ball is going to go past him. The back guy might be covering the server at the back, and Will can already go up right on top of the net because he's already knowing what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
But the worst thing that happens is I return down the line and I did not tell Will, I'm hitting to the person that's very close to you.
Yeah.
So for me, that is, again, predetermined. Make sure you and your partner. So this is, this is all a chess game. Mm-hmm. If you feel like I want to return two or three balls this game down the line because the person at the net is not that great of a volleyer, I might tell Will to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing I have learned in my life, if you're not a good volleyer and you are at the net and my partner and I are at the back and we also have a second more to react and we drill it to you at the net, you are worse than when I put Will at the net because a bad volleyer still likes to see a target.
Yeah.
So the bad volleyer sees Will, he or she is going to want to hit it quickly to Will, and they're better than they really are. When they don't have a target, because we're both kind of at the back and we're going to get to that ball, they're trying to do things that they're not good enough to do.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that before. Okay.
Yeah, so there's very good strategy. And then you can pound them, and you start smothering them after two or three shots.
Yeah.
And even if return is not that great, because they don't have a target, they're going to give you free points or play stupid shots.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of stuff that could reach this ebook. There's some stuff you can print or put in your ebook. There's always two apps. Well, there's one app that's free. And then there's another app to get to the other section where there's a little bit of detail. But the free stuff has to be good enough for people to buy into the.
That's right.
Like an app.
Well, I'll be sure to cite you in my sources. You'll be at the bottom.
Listen, I play
the footnotes.
Anacone was amazing to play with.
Yeah.
There were so many things I learned and things that I still teach. So it's about people in your life. It's people in your life that teaches you stuff. And then, again, like playing sometimes with other people is actually a good thing because you learn what they do that you never saw and that you did always the other way. And you gather this information. Mm-hmm. And you start getting smarter in what you thought you did well, you add these little things you learn from other people you play with.
Yeah.
And then when you get, you start building how you play doubles.
Yeah, just definitely.
Just a learning experience.
And watching the pros has helped me a lot the past like 2 or 3 years. And I usually tell people actually to watch the WTA doubles matches, because it's a little bit, some of the guys' matches are so fast that it's like hard to replicate at a club level. The WTA matches, I feel like, are a little bit, there's a little more like one up, one back, which is a little bit closer to club level doubles. Whereas the ATP, most of them are serve and volley all the time, which isn't as common at club level. So the ATX Open will be a great opportunity for people to see some live pro level doubles and ask themselves as they watch, like I do a lot of the time, like, what would I have done if I had that volley, or what would I have done if I, and you can learn a lot. You can learn a ton as far as their shot selection and things like that. So yeah, Christo, any last requests or anything else you want to leave the audience with before we hop off here?
Well, I'm really excited to, apart from running these events, the ATX Open, because mm-hmm. I'm also going to be able to watch some of these players play close up. I've been working with Fernanda Contreras Gomez now for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot about doubles in what I see, because she's doing really well in singles. I think she's going to do great in singles and doubles. She's going to be one of those players that's going to be ranked very high. And she's very fortunate that she does a lot of things good in doubles, but we're mm-hmm. pushing the singles now big time for her. And sure. She's the best player in Mexico. I think she's going to revolutionize the way tennis is going to start changing in Mexico. She's great. She's local. I can't wait that the times we're going to spend more and more together when the ATX Open or the tournaments gives me a little bit of time to go back and teach her the old ways of how we did it, that would yeah. become new and unexpected for the newer generation.
Mm.
Because I'm the Davis Cup captain now, so I'm mm-hmm. fortunate to hang out with Raven Klaassen, mm-hmm. top 10 player. He's still out. He's yeah. I think he's 40. And he played both. He played our versions and the new versions now.
Yeah.
And we shared information. And that information, when we shared, we figured out, I think this is the way I want to go. Because anytime you have something new, people now need to go and find time to start figuring this out.
Figure it out, yeah.
You know, and we all have our secrets and stuff. And this is why players come and they pay you to coach them.
Yeah.
Because to share the secretness of, and then my goal is always to say, we don't want people to know what we're doing. They just want to wonder why you're winning.
Yeah.
Because that is good. But
that's well put.
Anyway, you're doing a great job, Will. I mean, doubles is great. And I know you're working hard at this. We're looking forward to see you. Everyone, I love you to support the ATX Open. It's a WTA 250. It's going to be great. We want to make it really nice for the people in Austin. I mean, our mission is to follow the women's tour and equality for women, get companies involved that want to support women tennis. There's only men-dominated sports in Austin. We're looking forward to that. Please come in. If you see me at the tournament, come and say hi. Will be there. You know, he'll be dressed up in a jacket and a tie. It's mandatory for him to be there. But I'm just joking. But thank you very much for the time. I'm always loved to be part of this program. And all the listeners, remember, when you go down the line, you don't have to win the point. It's just sending a message.
That's the best takeaway.
If you don't tell your partner you go down the line, that means you don't like your partner. You want the head person to kill him. Then don't tell your partner. Go down the line. Make it nice and easy so they can tag him. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
For today.
Thanks a ton, Krista. We'll leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'll chat with you all next week. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.